Welcome to 2020, Otters. You are watching The Weekender, your guide to everything that's happening in the world of tabletop gaming. This morning, I'm joined by Ben on the screen, Jerry in a chair, Justin in a chair, Lloyd in the last chair. And strap in, folks, because there's some cool stuff on the way. 3D printing is about to take another step forward. Is it going to be a step? Is it going to be a leap? We're not entirely sure, but we do have some stuff to share with you. So this week, Hero Forge put up a teaser for Hero Forge 2.0, which is looking at full color custom miniatures. Okay.
This is a
brand new 2.0 system. We believe it's coming to Kickstarter, Ben. Is it? Is that the plan or?
Yeah, so it's going to come to Kickstarter soon-ish. Not entirely sure just yet. Maybe some more information over the weekend and that kind of thing. But from what they're saying, it sounds pretty good. So
yeah,
as I said in the news post about this, they've got loads of the stuff down already. So, you know, their system for actually creating the models themselves is pretty robust and pretty deep.
It is, yeah.
And the actual production of the 3D prints themselves at the various levels is very good. So this is going to be that next step for them, which will be very interesting.
Bring up the picture there till we get a chat about this.
Now, I'm wondering, can you buy the full color STL?
Right. Here's the thing about STL. STL is now about to be replaced, okay, as a file format.
Okay.
There's a new file format. I can't remember the name of it, but developed by the guys at Prusa. Okay, which is a full XML-based file format for 3D prints that contain not only the geometry, but also contain usage rights and color specifications.
Right.
Okay, so 3D is moving to the point where the one file will have all of the color information as well as all of the geometry. Where this is going to go, I don't know, okay? But I am flipping looking forward to speculating on this show for a while about it. So let's go into the actual image itself. Now, I have been staring at this image to try and work out just how this is done. Because full color till now, okay, has been achieved in a couple of different ways. Okay, so one of the ways that full color prints have been achieved has been by using a kind of like a powder based system. Okay, I think Shapeways run it out and they call it sandstone, I think it is. So I think we have a link to that.
Yeah, so this is some of the miniatures they do.
So this technology is actually a fair age. This goes way back to the start of 3D prints. So originally 3D prints were done by laying down layers of powder with a little bit of resin to hold them into place, okay? Now the originals, the color pigment was very washed out. It was all a bit
drab looking.
Drab looking.
The first time we seen this was what, 15 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, 15 maybe more.
Yeah, I remember whenever I think it was either during John's time at uni or just before it, he actually got his World of Warcraft character done out as one of these. So he got it 3D printed in full color. And it was, I mean, like even the details at that point weren't really, really good.
Yeah.
But again, that's a low poly model.
The difficulty is, you know, even with a high poly model, that powder effect always gives you quite a strange finish. The finish itself is a little bit, I don't know, a little bit dusty looking. It lacks the resolution.
It's like a rough primer went down.
So it could be this. It could be this. This kind of technology that they're using to make that work. The difficulty is when if you go back to their image, if this is an actual print,
that looks more like a 3D
render.
That's
a 3D render right there.
In which case, what is the point? You know, if you're going to do a teaser, surely you would do a teaser of the end result.
One of the key things that Hero Forge has always done, though, is that character creator. So this is probably giving you a teaser of what it's going to look like in the character creator.
So what you reckon is that this is more about them sticking to the software side, which is all about getting color onto your creations, and then how you get it printed out is kind of up to you. Well, you use the Shapeways.
Well, this is what I was going to ask is, can you get the full color file, or will this be an option where they absolutely have to print it because maybe the machinery?
Well, like, I mean, you can already print it through them, but I think it's already done through Shapeways.
Oh, okay, I see.
I think it's done via that route.
I see.
So what this could be, again, this could be a clumsy bit of advertising. I mean, clumsy in so much as it's working well. It's doing the rounds, but it's clumsy in that they're talking about full color custom miniatures with the focus being on the miniature, whereas what the reality of this is maybe Hero Forge 2.0 is more about you having the ability to apply color, and it's less about the technology on how the color is ultimately printed out. In which case, if we haven't got a breakthrough, if that's not a miniature, if that's not what the end result is going to look like, then we have basically the atheist, the dead atheist of technologies. It's all dressed up with nowhere to go.
The one thing I'm wondering as well is how customizable this is going to be for the color.
What did they say in the write-up, Ben? Did they talk about the miniatures, or are they just talking about the software?
There's pretty much very little else to go on, to be honest, for it. The thing that I would wonder, though, is that it wouldn't seem like a massive thing to go to Kickstarter if you were just going to make it part of the program. I would assume they're doing this to fund the ability to create it themselves.
They have said it's,
and be able to print it off for you,
so. Yeah, they have said it's based on existing technology, you know. It's so I wonder if it's only a render because the Kickstarter is to fund them actually getting their hands on the 3D printers.
Let me talk about two other ways that full color prints or that color prints happen. So another way, we don't have it here, is where it actually slices color paper and puts a pigment into the paper and then applies a small amount of resin, okay, and it actually builds it up. But the end result, yes, is colored, but it's pretty rubbish from a resolution perspective. You know, the detail on it is not
because it looks like layers of paper.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, we did a deep dive on this a good while ago where we talked about how you would actually do this. And I think one of the theories that came up was if there was some form of chemical, if there was a way to have, say, a UV cure, but depending on the wavelength would change the color of the actual resin it's curing through, to do your color prints that way.
I don't think that's feasible at this stage.
The
last way that I know of that color prints are done are by using, you can get a piece of hardware. This is on FDM machines. You can get a piece of hardware which can connect to multiple reels.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what it does is it calculates as it's pulling the reels and then cuts and joins the different colors together, so it comes out the other end in one continuous piece of PLA or filament, ABS or filament, but in the appropriate colors for that level of the print. But you're never going to achieve anything fades close blend. To no. that render there.
No.
Now, in terms of 3D, in terms of full color, possible 3D prints as well. Secret Weapon have been building up for their HD bases, okay? So these is a multi-level 3D texturing technique that they have been working on. And again, I'm not entirely sure how they're doing it. And whether it's based on a 3D printing technology or what, the end result looks very interesting, but flat, which makes me wonder if it's using some kind of like a screen printing kind of thing.
Yeah. Maybe even, you know, the Aquadep stuff you can do.
Yeah,
something like that would maybe go down.
Yeah,
so it's like a transfer going onto it.
Possibly. So there is the point of this is that they do see
it doesn't look a lot different from the whole pre-printed sort of HDF type stuff that we've seen.
Yeah.
It just looks like that sort of stuff cut to a base shape.
I don't know. It's a really interesting multi-level time.
And textured.
Yeah.
Well, they're saying it's multi-level because you can see it's like a mil higher up.
Yeah.
You know, that front one, you can see.
Yeah, it's a marble texture across the whole thing, and they've just cut that.
Yeah, so imagine a plastic base or a resin base or whatever that is, or an HDF base with another layer stuck on top with the color then applied to that. Still pretty cool, though.
Yeah. It is cool.
You have to rock them out in color and go, ooh, done, stick my models on there.
Yeah, job done. Well,
like, you know, it means we're getting to the stage. Like, one of the last big hurdles for a lot of hobbyists is painting. Like, Justin, you're not massively
I'm not
into
a
painting
huge fan
at the
of
moment.
It. I'll talk about that more on the Sunday, though.
Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But it's like... It is a big hurdle that's there, and even if this technology is expensive to begin with, from the perspective of buying a single hero models for your RPGs and stuff, this could be awesome. You know, people are willing to invest heavier in one-off models because we already know that the Hero Forge will do the custom poses. You know, you can customize the models. Yeah. To such an extent.
Well,
to the ability to then add colors and shading.
I have to wonder if each piece of clothing will have just a preset color or if you're going to be allowed to change that color as
I would imagine. Look, I would imagine you will absolutely be able to choose underlying colors and it will do the shading and stuff like that and all for you. It seems obvious to me that, that technically that is very doable. Well, the key to this is the output, though, Justin. It's what is the end result? If the end result is that...
Yeah, you're happy.
Am I happy? If the end result is that...
You're ecstatic.
I'm ecstatic. Static. I think that this industry is about to blow up if the end result is what we see there. If that is an actual print and it comes out like that and they have found some way to get that quality of 3D print as smooth as that, as detailed as that, because look, all of the fingers are intact. Yeah. There's no stepping lines. You know, it's...
Well, that's because that's a 3D render.
But that's what he wants.
This is what I'm saying, though. If
I tell you what, there's one of our club members you should talk to then, Clifford, because he actually got some stuff printed by Hero Forge just to have a look and see what the quality is like that comes out of them.
But I can tell you what the quality is. You know, from our own resin 3D printing, we know that we can now print miniatures.
Oh, yeah.
We can print miniatures to a wonderful level of detail with... almost invisible levels of stepping and stuff.
Well, anybody that
and that's
saw
on
John's,
a 200-pound machine.
Yeah, anyone that saw John's battle mech that he did just before Christmas, I set it up to run for him. You don't see the steps in it.
Yeah, it's we know that we can print minis today, but the key to this will be the output because the software is already. Pretty much starting to be there in the likes of the Prusas and the others from the perspective of adding color. If we can't get it out at that quality, then
no point. Yeah.
As I've said, it's a dead atheist.
Yep.
It's all dressed up, no place to go. Mm. Well, you know, we're waiting for something else. So,
very
interesting piece of news, and I'm very keen to see where that goes. AOS news, okay? The Aether War army set is out. Ben, what do you think of it?
So I think it's kind of cool. It's obviously not going to be everybody's cup of tea, as most of these things are, but it's nice to see them going in a little bit of a different direction, telling a little bit of a different story, because in this one, you get the Caradhron Overlords going up against the Disciples of Zench. There's two stories for this one, just so you're aware, just so you can click through the different ones, because the first one we saw was just before Christmas, well, just after Christmas, and then the other one was a little bit later as well, which shows off the army set itself, all that kind of thing. But you get two new characters in the set, so you've got the Magister on his disc. So there's a Magister of Zench there. And there's also the Endrin Master with his weird dirigible suit that will no doubt, again, be quite a Marmite model, but it's out there as well. The set comes with a whole bunch of different flying models and all sorts of things there as well. So you've got loads of bits and pieces in there. So you've got a flying Caradron dwarves, your Dwardin, and the little dirigible suits. You've also got some of the sort of airships they've got as well in there. And then on the other side for the Zentian guys, you've also got the guys on their discs and that kind of thing too, with the Zangors and stuff in the mix there too. This also comes on the back of them doing some extra stuff for the factions as a whole, because they tend to do these new sets as a way of reintroducing the factions back into the Mortal Realms. So as well as the actual set itself, you'll also be able to get the new battle tomes for the Disciples of Zench and for the Caradron Overlord, which of course comes with loads of new models, new rules and scenarios and all kinds of things like that in there as well. So if you like these factions, they've been updated to fit the new sort of look for Age of Sigmar. So
what do you guys make of the factions?
I'm okay with the Zench. I really don't like the Caradron Overlords.
How come?
I don't like seeing them with the Ridgibubbles. They look too tacky.
Let's get one of these bubbles.
They remind me of Tech Talk from the Wizard of Oz.
I was just going to say that. Yeah.
They do have a Tech Talk kind of look.
It's probably because of the metallic looking beard and tash on them.
Yeah.
I don't know. For a fantasy world, it just looks too tacky.
Go back to the bigger picture of the miniature.
I have this dude.
Yeah. There we go.
He does it. Someone needs to wind him up.
Yeah.
I think it looks perfectly feasible for the Mortal Realms and what they're trying to do in creating its own aesthetic and look. I mean, obviously, for those people that like more traditional dwarves, they're maybe not going to like them as much. But I think it's a cool idea. It blends together that sort of element of fantasy and steampunk that we see in other properties like Warcraft, for example, with their dwarves and gnomes. So it's something that's been done before.
But I think this paint job hasn't helped, though, because it really does look like a wind-up...
A clockwork
creature rather than an actual dwarf.
Is there a point, though?
Too decky, too sci-fi, I think.
Is there a point in a war game such as Age of Sigmar where you diversify the factions so much that you start to maybe potentially lose the overall character of the actual game? Do you know what I mean? Where we're suddenly...
Everything seems so desperate.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. The world itself starts to lose a cohesion. Mm.
I think that's the thing that a lot of people have felt over. I mean, Age of Sigmar's been out for quite a long time now, but I think it's just a thing that people are still trying to get their head around a little bit. Because when we talked about, there was some news about the new Age of Sigmar role playing game coming out quite soon from Cubicle 7. And even in the comments for that, people were like, oh man, hopefully this will give me a better understanding of the world itself and how it all mashes together. Because I think people are feeling, to a degree, some of the things you were saying there, where some of the factions feel like they're very different and disparate from each other. You've obviously then got all the different realms that are entirely different from each other in terms of the different sort of magical essences that they have in that thing as well. So it's definitely something that exists. Although I think I've seen... Games Workshop seem to have been getting around to the point where they're trying to deliver something for everybody as well at the moment, which is kind of cool. So.
The difficulty with trying to deliver something for everybody is you can very quickly end up delivering nothing for anybody.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
That's my concern in something like this. World building is a very important aspect.
Well, I've always felt kind of lost in Age of Sigmar. I don't know where I am. I don't know what's going on. You know, I don't know why people are fighting. I don't know who hates who.
Yet all of that is there.
Yeah,
But it was pitched in such an ethereal kind of loose concept-y kind of way in the beginning that I believe the actual background has changed a lot.
Yeah.
Over the time, but that initial pitch did make it rather.
Yeah, but if I'm wanting to dive into, say, the 40K universe, I've never heard of it before. I don't know what it is. You'll pick up there's two books. So there's Plague War, and what was the first one? Oh, I forget what the first one was, but there were two novels that came out with The Return of Gulliman, and that basically brought you right up to speed with what was going on in the world.
Yeah, but if I want to start a game, the first thing I don't buy is a novel. Yeah. I buy the game, and the game should have background history and that sort of thing. Yeah. And presumably Age of Sigmar has that.
It does.
Yeah.
Yes, so it does.
There you go.
Like if you pick up some of the sort of either the battle time for whatever faction you're in or anything like that, it does start off with explaining like the fact that Sigmar is fighting against Chaos and Archeon for all the different all points and, you know, the realm gates and that kind of thing. And then they've tried to develop a little bit more of a narrative and change the story with what they've done with Soul War, which, starts to push different factions against each other, create that grander narrative for things, because you've got Nagash going up against Archeon with Sigmar on the sidelines as well. So they are developing that grand narrative again, but it's with 40K, there's obviously so much lore behind it, and people have been exposed to it in sort of general culture that it's a lot easier to get into. Whereas obviously with this, they're having to effectively start from
scratch.
Well, if you remember the old world, I mean, like, there was so much lore for it. I mean, like,
I'm not even talking about the quantity of lore. I suppose what I'm getting at is sometimes it's easier to wrap your head around and to engage with a world that is more grounded. Because if you have a world where anything is possible and everything happens, you lack the ability to actually get the flavor of the world itself.
Then I don't think Age of Sigmar is a world. People are still thinking of it, people like myself who have difficulties with it, are thinking of it in terms of it's Warhammer, the next, you know, Warhammer 2.0.
Next gen,
They should have taken the Warhammer name off it altogether, because it's not one world where all of these people, like Zinch, aren't in the south. Orcs aren't in the West. They're, you know, they're all in their own little. It's more like 40K, where they are all on their own individual worlds or individual realms,
and occasionally
they come into conflict. They overlap with little sort of bubbles. You're better off thinking of it as a completely new game from a backstory and just whole cloth. If I came in with a new fantasy game tomorrow, you wouldn't look at it and go in terms of something you already know. You'd have to start again from scratch.
But here's my difficulty with that, right? If you set up an environment where it's so, I'm struggling to find the word, ethereally open in that sense, to me, it feels so contrived. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You lose that ability to, you look at any of the great fantasy properties, including 40K, which I can consider a fantasy property. You know, the 40K in many respects has planets all over the world, but there's a groundedness to it in that, you know, you're expecting these things. Well, Lord of the Rings, these things are living creatures. Here is the where and the why of they're there. Do you know what I mean?
Rather than just there's a bubble here and a bubble there and they connect once in a while.
Well, it's not even that. It's just this you can almost feel that it's been so purposefully left open so as to be able to create, let's throw something new in there. Let's throw something new in there. And obviously, the longer a world is around, the more the threads of things need to be there. It's quite difficult to introduce a new race into 40K now, because you would wonder, with the exploitations taking place all across the galaxy,
why has nobody seen them before?
Why have they not been seen before? Because, you know, there's a groundedness there. Whereas if it's just a bubble of another realm that just suddenly appears,
it's not too bad for 40K, because they actually do have unexplored parts of the galaxy. So they have what they call lucky space out beyond the Imperial borders.
Yes, but again, it's one of those things of, you know, you'd be introducing a race. What's the motivation of that race? Why is it attacking every other race? You know, it's not an easy task. It's not an easy task.
Whereas it does feel
to me that that Age of Sigmar, and this is where the Cacaradon, or these overlords start to do this to me. It does feel that, okay, guys, right, if we're going to create a fantasy property, how do we create a fantasy property that gives us unlimited possibilities for constantly introducing new races, new armies and things like that? How do we remove these constraints that we have seen over the past 30 years that have locked us in and that let us ended up with a dying property where we struggled to add anything new to create new revenue? I admire and understand their reasoning for doing it, but equally, the other side of that is whenever you remove those constraints from the world, getting your head around the world, in my opinion, in my very humble opinion, getting your head around the world starts to become more difficult because the world lacks any grounding to tie it together.
Yeah. For me, it's being able to understand where I am and what's going on is always a huge issue. I mean, like, if I'm playing 40K, I know the Emperor's on Earth, and I know that I'm out in this segment of the galaxy. I know I'm going to this planet. You know, it's very much easier to place yourself instead of just going, I am in a realm somewhere and somehow.
Well, like, you look at the number of times you've played out there. You're always playing in that quarter smegma quadrant, isn't it? So you love it out there playing in among that. So
Segmentum Pacificus.
Yes.
Right. Well, I did catch Jerry out a really good one recently.
Oh, so did you?
On the Monday, we were unpacking the GW order that came in for the store.
Yes.
And I passed Shay some Age of Sigmar stuff. Mm-hmm. And without thinking, I went, there you go, there's Age of Smegmar. And Jerry just pipes up from the door going, why has no one called it that before?
Well, on the topic of continuing with AOS, we sure have some have. More.
Well, there's one more thing in this news story,
yeah,
which is the endless spells.
Yes. And everybody knows I'm a fan of the Endless Spells. Oh,
these look beautiful.
I think the Endless Spells is a fantastic addition. I love the idea of spells being represented on the tabletop. Mm-hmm. I think it breathes a whole new life into them. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more variety because, you know, again, you always kind of end up with that mm-hmm. thought of the magic firebolt kind of a thing. But yeah, they are lovely sculpts.
They are lovely
sculpts. You know, I think... It's hard to deny that AOS is the best aesthetic
they've got
that Games Workshop
stuff.
Have in their entire range. Mm. Like the Age of Sigmar aesthetic is absolutely beautiful. Mm. The sculpts are incredible. You know, like when I walk past the Age of Sigmar stuff and I look over to the 40K stuff, I think to myself, it's just head and shoulders above it. It is just
all the bright shiny colors that are attracting you.
It's not only the bright shiny colors. It is the adventurousness of the sculpts. Mm. Obviously, the grognard gamer in me looks at them and goes, "I will break everything,"
unless you buy something like the Skaven.
I will break Skaven though because they've got lots of little sticky bits.
Oh yeah, all the little bells and crap.
Yeah. Do not underestimate my ability to break everything. And that is, I have a Night Haunt army, and every time I touch it, I break it.
Okay.
So, but I can't deny the aesthetic of it is absolutely gorgeous.
No, don't underrate that though. It's one of the reasons I haven't got an Age of Sigmar thing. Is I don't want an army of little Chuckies trying to stab me at every time I reach down. And when they don't successfully stab me, it's because I've broken them.
Yeah. Jerry, you remember the old Night Goblin Spear Regiment?
Yes, I do.
But they were nice, chunky spears.
Oh, yeah, you could never break them.
But you could literally pop your hand down on top of the unit, touch it, and lift like five or six of the unit up with you because they were stabbing your hand.
Yes, but
they were intact.
I still have Night Goblins that are 20-odd years old, and they still have their plastic spears intact.
Yep.
Whereas I've had Age of Sigmar models that were 20 minutes old and lying flat on the table because an ankle or a bit of cloth or a thread broke.
Yeah.
You know, it's there is a balance between...
An adventurous sculpt and something
and
that's
a warren-proof sculpt.
Well,
to be fair, it'd be a lump of clay.
Just like blocks of wood.
There's one or two of them, they do just look like they should be on a shelf for display only.
Oh, they are, but, you know, there you have it. Mm. Right, we have Ogors.
Yeah. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff extra that came out towards the end of last week as well. So the ogres are secondary at the moment because I'm just going to go back to something that I alluded to in the last segment where we were looking at I was talking about what's coming next in terms of the story.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a new campaign book coming out which follows the sort of continuation of the Soul Wars, which is where Nagash has raised up his armies of the dead after the Necroquake. So you'll be pleased to know that we're back with those bony guys again, Lloyd. Because they're going to be charging into the 8 points to try and take over the Baron Spire. And obviously Archeon is not happy about that. So he's descended from his tower with his sword at the ready and his monsters and his Chaos Legion just to try and destroy Nagash. Don't know what's happening with everyone else at the moment, but that's going to be quite interesting there. Beyond that, for Warhammer Underworlds, so we've also got the new Ogre Hunter, as you talked about before. So this is Hrothgorn's Man Trappers, which is the new tribal gang that they're doing for this game. Hopefully you should know Warhammer Underworlds by now. It's a little skirmish board game that they do that goes down pretty well at clubs and things like that as well.
Yeah.
And this is a new model for them, which introduces a very traditional-looking ogre that a lot of people will very much like, along with some Noblars and his pet Saber Tusk as well, which is pretty cool there too. And then to kick things off, but to finalize stuff for the Age of Sigmar news for the moment, we also got a little bit of a teaser that Teclis, the mighty mage from the old world, now turned a god in the mortal realms, is ready to bring his, as they say, pointy elves back to the world of Age of Sigmar. So all those kind of traditional elves that you might have recognized from Warhammer and the like are going to be coming back in a new fashion, I'd imagine.
More pointy stuff.
Yes, yeah, so more pointy stuff for you to get stabbed on.
Well,
so,
looking at that, you know, cut out of the miniature, it does look like there's a lot of bits that could break off there.
Well, that brings my fantasy, agnostic fantasy elf army back into play. It I have does, them yeah. pointy high elves.
Yeah.
With their massive fists. I still love them. I still think they're one of the nicest looking armies that I've ever seen. Was Teclis, did he ride around on the dragon?
Tyrion and Teclis were the twin brothers. Tyrion was super fighter and Teclis was super mage. Uh-huh.
And then Imric rode around on the dragon, I believe.
Yeah, Imric was the...
Imric.
One of the dragon lords.
Yeah.
But Teclis, it's nice to see Teclis is back. It's nice to see he's still wielding the Moonstaff of Lilith, because I can quite clearly see that in that picture.
Yeah.
The Moonstaff of Lilith. Oh, there it is, yeah.
So that'll be a big crescent moon just disappearing out of picture there, being held aloft by a little elf goddess.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's nice to see that he's still got Lilith on side, even though he seems to have become a god himself.
He's trained a lot of stuff after that massive cataclysm, apparently.
Yeah, well, you know, why not?
Well, just walks in and goes, see all this stuff? Mine now.
Well, he was the one who brought magic to humans.
He was, yeah.
Bet you regrets that.
Well, you know, a little bit.
Right.
No work now. 40K. Should have kept yourself to yourself, Teclis.
In 40K news, we have more Battle Sisters on the way and Tau. Now, it's been 7 years since the last major Tau drop,
something
if I remember
like
correctly.
Wow.
Time has flown.
Wait, I've just caught up to what we're talking about. It's just sunk in. I'm actually to believe it. There's a Tau release coming up.
Yes, there is a Tau release
There's a new Tau book coming.
Sorry, where Dimeboy, easy.
They're going to remove the crit.
Ben, what can you tell us about the Sisters release, first and foremost?
Cool, yeah. So obviously, last year, it's 2020 already. But last year, they did the massive release of the sort of collector's edition version for the Battle Sisters, the Adeptus Sororitas. Now we're actually going to be seeing the proper release of the army with the new codex and a whole bunch of new characters and models and all sorts of things like that. And I believe it's coming out for pre-order this weekend, so watch out for that. And so it'll be here today, in fact. But yes, loads of good stuff for these. We've got the traditional Battle Sisters squads on the way. So if you want your sort of line troops that you need for your armies, you've got them. As well as that, you've got the Retributors. So they're going to be the big heavy weapon people that you bring into the mix. And then beyond that, they're also going to be introducing some sort of jetpack troopers as well, whose name has now escaped me. I'm sure Jerry can jump back in and tell me what they are. But yeah. And then we've also got the really cool new stuff that kind of is on the fringes of the Adeptus Sororitas stuff, which you wouldn't necessarily have believed was actually going to appear in here, but we've got the Arco Flagellants, which I think are very, very cool looking models.
Cherubs in disguise.
So the Arco Flagellants, a lot of people might know, they're the guys that sort of like, a lot of them are, you know, like penal, you know, prisoners and that kind of thing, that have been sort of grafted on with weird electronical whips and all sorts of odd bionics and that kind of thing. And they're let loose with like a kill word onto the battlefield to kill people and that kind of thing. I believe there's a character in there as well that used to be in 54 millimeter scale as Damien.
Damien from Inquisitor.
That sort of died a death. But he's back in 28 mil form now, so that's good.
You say died a death.
Artemis and Damien now, which is pretty cool.
Inquisitor's got a massive following. When people dropped it from 54 mil, you can just use the rules as is in 28. So if
that's there, exactly
there's
what
a huge Inquisitor 28 mil face page group, because it was a good fun little game.
Did I see pictures of penitent engines there?
Yeah, you got regular penitent engines. And then you've got another one in here as well, which is really, really cool looking. So I'm not sure, is that a character one here, Ben?
They haven't specifically said in the articles that I was looking at, but there's basically going to be a few different variations of the penitent engine. So you'll be able to build a few different sort of weapon loadouts for each of the different penitent engines. And then also that slightly larger one, which I would assume from the look of it, is going to have a little bit more of like a psychic focus potentially to it as well, because you can see some sort of elements to it, which is interesting.
That sarcophagus looking thing's cool.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things I did also read about was something, you know how we were talking about the fact that they've got the sort of armor sockets and stuff on their bodies?
Yeah.
We weren't sure why that was there. That's because they've kind of flipped the fluff a little bit, and they've done it so that they actually do have links to their power armor through their bodies, and also enables them to be connected up to horrifying engines like the Penitent Engine if a sister is to go astray. So they effectively prepare them effectively for what's coming if they decide to turn away from the Emperor's.
We know eventually you're going to break. Therefore, we may as well put these sockets in, you know.
Yeah.
Well, yes, exactly, yeah. As well as the different models that you can see there, they've also done a new terrain piece. So this is a new massive Sisters of Battle statue. So you've got the Saint there.
I really like this.
That's gorgeous. Chapel.
I think this is really cool. It's already getting me, you know, ideas going around for objective-based games and that kind of thing. Like, obviously, when they did stuff like Armageddon and that kind of stuff back in the day, they had the Blood Angels defending around the statues of Sanguinius and that kind of thing. And so having something like that where your Sisters of Battle are trying to, you know, save this ruined chapel from being destroyed by orcs or chaos would be pretty cool on the tabletop. But yeah, it's all looking very, very good for the Sisters of Battle, the Adeptus Sororitas, over the next couple of weeks and months, because they're going to get a lot of new releases, which will be really cool.
Right, so, tell me about the Tau. Let's get to the Tau.
Are you ready? Okay. Are you ready, Lloyd?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, bring it. Bring it.
Eagle.
What have we got?
New commander.
Is that it? Oh, that's Shadow Sun.
Shadow Sun. Commander, yeah. Shadow Sun. So, yes, Shadow Sun is back. She's going to be effectively the main character of the next Psychic Awakening book. So that's where this is kind of tying the Tau into what's happening in the wider world of Warhammer 40,000. I think the model looks really cool. Yes, obviously, as a lot of people have said, in the world of Warhammer 40,000, the floor is lava for basically any character miniature. But I think it looks very awesome there, as you can see. And it's good to see more Tau, or T'au, as I call them, because they're all from Yorkshire now. With
yeah,
that,
T'au.
But yeah, very, very cool looking model. Hopefully we'll see some more stuff to sort of go along with that, which would be kind of cool. But
they really need to release some more stuff.
They really do, yeah.
Other than the big Riptides and stuff, we've seen bugger all for years.
You've got the Ghost Keel came out, didn't it?
Yeah,
the big
Beast Sting.
A new sniper team, I think, also came out.
Yeah,
we haven't seen a vehicle, though, in
a good while, yeah.
In maybe 15 years?
I'd like is some regular...
The Flyer that they did.
Oh, well, yes, they did the Tau Flyer. Yeah.
What I'd like is
there was a small skimmer they did too.
Is it some more alternatives to regular sort of sized troops?
Mm. Yes. Know,
rather than just stealth suits and regular Tau.
Pathfinders, yeah.
Pathfinders and Kroot. You're basically, that's about it, really. Yeah.
You've got.
Do you want more species, though?
Vespids?
That's what I'd really like
Vespids never got. Sorry, Ben. Vespids never got fleshed out. Mm. So maybe if they go back to the Vespid, redesign the sculpt, because I think the sculpt's old now for Vespids,
yeah.
And actually expand them out into...
Possibly.
Because maybe rather than going Tau, they just expand the Vespid thing and they expand the Kroot thing a bit.
See, I would almost let the Tau have like some, you know, convert it over humans. We were fighting with them.
Well, it's in the fluff.
Yeah. Exactly, I don't think there's enough humans in the
if you're looking for more variety, just
we're looking for more variety, let's have more of the same, yeah? there's enough humans, Justin. Well, there's an opportunity for them to. Do you remember I talked about how difficult it is for them to get a new race in?
Well, here's
the Tau's. They're obvious.
Yeah, because the whole part is you've got the collective. Anybody who's within the Tau Empire gets subsumed in some respect, and I can think of one right off the bat that could quite easily come in because it's been there since day one. Bring back squats.
Yeah, I was just
make them
that.
Part of the Tau Empire.
Yeah,
ooh.
That could be very useful.
You could go that route. I mean, because it does sound a bit ridiculous that they're supposed to bring all these other alien races and
but
stuff.
But you never see Kroot.
And that's it. Yeah. And one squad of Vespids.
And one
and
squad
that
of
was it.
Stingwings that nobody ever bought because they look like they have wind.
We do know squats are still around because they are in Necromunda.
Yes, yeah. Ben.
I was going to say, it's an interesting one to think about in terms of the squats and stuff because I think, were they called the Demiurge?
Demiurge.
Yeah, they are like, you know, master armorers and artisans and things within the world of Warhammer 40,000. Maybe they could have been bought into the collective in order to make some of their larger ships and new sort of battle suits and that kind of thing.
I mean, it doesn't have to be the whole squat empire or whatever they currently have, but if there were hearth, they were called hearth worlds, I think. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, if they did have worlds that were bordering on Tau space, then it's possible that they could have slices of them.
Yeah.
And it's a way they can then test if people go, ooh, they're a bit fun, then they could expand them into full. Here's the not allied to the Tau, the ones who are still within their own borders and are able to punch back when an alien race goes, you're part of our empire now.
Was there not another abhuman race, Rattlings, at one point?
Yeah, they're part of the Imperium.
Yeah, part of the Imperium.
Rattling snipers.
They're snipers, yeah.
Well, I definitely think there's room for expansion.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, but not but it humans. Doesn't, yeah, but it doesn't even need to be anything we've even heard of. This is their opportunity to go.
Yeah, throw in somebody totally new.
Tau's ventured off such, such, and may, and enslaved these people or whatever.
Freed them.
Freed them.
You do see a lot of alien races in the old Horus Heresy books. They introduced a lot of them, but they murdered them all.
Exterminatus, Justin. Well, exterminatus.
Great Crusade, while it was still going.
Right. Moving off, we have the Elder Scrolls, okay? So there's a release focus around March 2020, Ben. What can you tell us about it?
Cool, yeah. So Modiphius, over the last couple of weeks, has started to kind of refine exactly what's going to be coming out when the game launches, as you say, in March 2020, so this year. So kicking things off is going to be the core set and sort of taking a note out of what 7TV have done, Crooked Dice have done with 7TV, and also what they've learned from a lot of feedback from people, is they're going to be doing a core set that doesn't contain any miniatures, but it will contain all the extra bits and pieces you need in order to play the game. So the core set's going to contain things like scenarios and all the rules you need. You'll also get your tokens, cards, and a whole bunch of other stuff for the different factions and things like the Dragonborn and your characters. And it'll also give you all the things you need to play through scenarios, either solo, competitive, or cooperative as well. Then, to go alongside that, you're also going to get the miniature sets, which you can then buy whichever one you want to fit into what you want to do with the core set. So they're going to be breaking down into the Bleak Falls Barrow Delve starter set, which a lot of people who played Skyrim will be familiar with. It's the first big dungeon you go into effectively. And this is going to contain the Dragonborn themselves alongside some of the Draugr that you'd be fighting in there. So if you want to do like a solo adventure or something cooperative or maybe even competitive, you can play through this with the core set. Then beyond that, they're also going to have two different factions. So the big factions that are fighting within the world of Skyrim. So you've got the Imperial Legion starter set, which is led by Hadvar, who people will know from the Escape from Helgen at the beginning of the game, and some of his Imperial spell swords and the Imperial Guardsmen as well. And then you've also got on the other side, are they the good guys? No one's the good guys. No one really knows. The Stormcloak starter set from the other side of Skyrim, led by Zarald, Thrice Pierced, and Raloth, who was also from this game.
Freedom!
So you've got two sort of divergent paths for you to go down there. Obviously, because the game can be played, as I said before, solo, competitive, or cooperative, you can use these as your little warband that you're going to take out and fight other people with, or they could be NPCs that will wander into what you're doing on the cooperative side of things, or obviously in a solo setting, you've got lots of different things that you can throw in there to sort of, you know, have your Dragonborn fight out against pretty much everything that exists within the world of Skyrim and Elder Scrolls. Beyond that, we're going to obviously see a lot more expansions and stuff like that in the future. Elder Scrolls and Skyrim is pretty massive. I'd imagine we're going to maybe see some dragons, since they've done some really big stuff to Fallout with the massive sort of walkers and things they did. I think it was like the Liberty Titan or whatever it's called. So hopefully they're going to do something with dragons and giants and trolls and that kind of thing. And if nothing else, this will be pretty damn good for you who are going to be picking stuff up for your fantasy role-playing games and that kind of thing as well.
Yeah, so, there's beautiful-looking designs. You know, it's, And I'm keen to see it. Like, this is... It's nice to see video game properties done well on the tabletop, so it'll be interesting to see what the uptake on this is, because it is a very close crossover. You know, people that like RPGs playing
Skyrim is a great one to convert, because the amount of time people sink into it as a digital RPG.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and being able to play with friends now, because it's the one thing I always want from, like, Skyrim or Fallout 4 is... other people to play
it's with. Okay, right. Justin, I'm your friend, man. How does Skyrim, you're a lucky guy.
How does Skyrim and the Elder Scrolls relate to each other?
It's basically all set within the same world. It's all world, the Elder Scrolls.
Because I played a game called Elder Scrolls.
Yeah, Skyrim is Elder Scrolls Skyrim.
I gave up pretty quickly. Because I kept getting killed by some little tiny troll thing that was supposed to be really easy to kill. After about 60 tries, I was like, bollocks to this.
Which one was this? Oblivion or?
Oh, it might have been Oblivion.
It's one of the older ones. Really? That thing killed you?
Yeah, over and over again.
I couldn't even get past character creation because I gave myself like a dragon head,
right?
And I was green to this point of the neck where it turned white again. And I thought, no.
You not put a shirt on?
No, I thought, no, that looks ridiculous. If I'm going to be green and scaly, You commit to the reptilian breed, man. I wanted to be reptilian all the way through, honestly, just like the Queen.
You should give Skyrim a shout. It's very, very good.
I was just going to say, I'm just going to point out to all those people who just had a heart attack at Warren saying I was a dragon-headed man. It's an Argonian. It's okay. Everybody knows it's an Argonian.
Yeah.
I'm not allowed to call myself a dragon-headed man.
Of course you are.
Well, you could be Sauron.
Will have had a heart attack about it. So.
They haven't talked about...
In the immortal words of Bon Scott... Dragon-headed man.
But Argonian's not far off Dragonian.
Dragon-headed man.
They haven't talked about the core mechanics for the game at all yet, have they? We don't know whether or not it's going to be similar to the likes of Fallout or whether it's a whole cloth new system.
Apparently, I've forgotten the name of the guy behind it. He's the guy who's Mark Latham. He's the guy who's done the new edition of Batman.
Mark doing it? Yes.
Yeah. So he's taking
very capable game designer. Yeah.
He's taken up the reins and done some stuff in the background to this, and they've learned a lot of lessons from what they did with Fallout.
Right.
So I think this is going to be like this is the new bar for what they're trying to do for this kind of skirmishy game. So
Interesting to see where it goes. I haven't played. Last one I played was Morrowind, which I think
was the
third, might be the second. But I do like the look of the actual miniature, especially the undead in it. So
The Draugr?
Yeah, well, just the undead, because Draugr will be the zombies, whereas the skeletons won't be that. But yeah, they're quite nice, and I could see them fitting into other games as well.
Will this be a similar scale to... Size-wise to the...
we have one next door, the promotional Dragonborn.
Yes,
that
we do.
They sent in. So
do you know the way there's been a big trend towards bigger minis recently?
Yeah, I think it looms on the larger scale of like 32. Yeah.
I believe they're around 32.
Ooh.
So. Okay, next up we have Gangs of the Undercity. Now, this is a new game that's coming out from Fragging Unicorn Games. Ben, what can you tell us about it, man?
Yeah, cool. So, as you say, Fragging Unicorn Games, already an amazing name for a company.
Yes.
That's awesome. This is going to be coming out on Kickstarter during the summer of this year. And hopefully we're going to be learning a little bit more about it over the next coming weeks and months as well. But the basic sort of like overview of the game is it's going to be a 28mm skirmish game that kind of blends together the ideas of fantasy and cyberpunk. And you'll be building up either your own individual gangs or taking existing gangs that have background and story already built into them from the world of Gangs of the Undercity. And you'll be fighting it out for control of provinces and districts within the city itself in order to build up your gangs through a campaign style play. What we've seen so far of it, we've got some really cool looking miniatures in render format, as you can see. Over on social media, they have also been showing off some bits and pieces of their painted models they've done, so some test sculpts and that kind of thing. And it's all looking very, very nice indeed. As someone who was a big fan of the likes of Shadowrun back in the day and that kind of mashup of sci-fi and fantasy, and what they're doing obviously with Starfinder now as well from Paizo, I think this is a really cool direction to go down. Really nice to see what they're doing here. They're taking that familiarity of something and then mixing it in with something a little bit different as well. The story sounds pretty cool as well. So it's all about sort of like these oppressed societies fighting back against the city itself and trying to take control of things for their own ideological reasons and that kind of thing too. So sounds very cool. The miniatures look very nice. And as I say, hopefully we'll be learning a little bit more about it in the run-up to the Kickstarter later this year.
I wonder if we'll get a not little Keanu stuck in the middle of it all. He'd blend right in.
He would.
With Cyberpunk 2077 coming this year.
Right. Next up, an interesting one, because I have no idea what this is, so I'm really looking forward to this one. Marvel United, is a team-up between Spin Master and Seamon.
Okay, you're going to be mildly disappointed.
Am I going to be mildly disappointed?
Mildly disappointed. So it is Marvel.
Right.
But it's chibi.
Okay, moving on. Right, okay. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, anything with the word United in it isn't very good.
Ref takes a point away.
Come on, dude.
No football references on the show, please. That's how wars are started.
Chelsea fan has stuck in the knife. Okay, Ben, talk us through Chibi United.
Okay, so this is a new project from Seamon and Spinmaster, and it's helmed by Eric Lang. So a lot of people will know him, obviously, as quite a prolific developer of games within the industry.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I mean, Justin will never win at this game.
No, I'd never win one of his games. I don't know what it is, whatever way he does his math. I just don't get on with them. I cannot win.
You just win.
I never win any of his games. Any game designed by this man, I lose.
That's because you're a one-trick pony with the Alpha Strike. Take it away, man, and you're done.
But the game looks to be a sort of more cooperative board game-based experience where you're going to be taking on the role of the Avengers in their new chibi style, as you can see in the artwork and stuff there, going up against the likes of Red Skull and Ultron, and I believe they've got Taskmaster in the mix as well. Seems to be popping up all over the place in terms of video games and that kind of thing too. But as I say, as you were saying earlier, this is a little bit more chibi styled, a little bit more kid-friendly, which I think is interesting. And the team-up with Spin Master is the interesting one as well, because Spin Master have done some Marvel games in the past that are a little bit more sort of like mainstream games. And also, they are pretty good on the whole sort of kid game style thing. So hopefully when it comes to this, it's going to be a little bit more of an entry project for people to dive into with younger gamers. And obviously, those that are massive Marvel fanboys like me, because it looks pretty cool. I'm really interested to see what they do with this one. As I say, I like Eric Lang and his designs. You know, Blood Rage is a big favorite of mine that came out quite a few years ago now, but Blood Rage is a massive favorite for me. Really like what he's done with other stuff as well in terms of Seamon and, you know, working on Zombicide and all that kind of thing too, which is pretty cool, and Trudvang Chronicles and that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, looking forward to it. And it may even be based on an existing property and sort of tweaked a little bit, one called Arcadia Quest. So if anyone's heard of that, maybe it's going to be going down that kind of similar route.
Yeah, we know Arcadia Quest.
Is that not Ninja Division?
No. There's Super Dungeon Explorer, yeah, which is probably what you're
That's
thinking.
That's the one I'm thinking of. Sorry.
Yeah.
And then there's Arcadia Quest, which is the one which is done by Seamon.
Gotcha.
Okay. Next up, we have two big names, Isaac Childress and Rob Davio. I think that's how I pronounce it. From Gloomhaven and Pandemic Legacy fame, bring into Kickstarter Return to the Dark Tower.
Yeah. So some people, you old folk may remember a game that was out in the past called Dark Tower, which was voiced quite famously in the adverts by Orson Welles. Very cool. You can see the video in that post down below. Mm-hmm. But Restoration Games, who have been working on a whole bunch of older board games, bringing them back to life, like Fireball Island and things, for example, are now working on a Kickstarter, which is coming out on the 14th of January for Return to Dark Tower. Now, the big sort of like thing behind this game is that it's a little bit like a role-playing game, a little bit like an adventure sort of fantasy board game at the same time. But in the center of the board sits a massive electronic tower that sort of governs all the things like monsters that you'll be facing, what you find in certain areas of the game, and also the boss at the end of the game as well. So we're going to see a really cool new board. We're going to see that lovely new tower that you can see there as well. Obviously, with these big names like Isaac Childress and Rob Davio behind it, as well as a whole bunch of other people and some fabulous artists as well, this should be a pretty impressive project. And as I say, Restoration Games have done some good stuff in the past for some of their other games, and I imagine this is going to be pretty much the same. So.
Interesting.
Was that a digital thing? Was it a digital chip thing, or was it a VHS thing?
No, the original one, I think it was a chip in it. The VHS one was you're thinking of Atmosphere, aren't you?
Yeah, I had the DVD version of that. But it's kind of reminded me of the one you have, Warren, with the 40K computer in it. You turn it on, it goes...
Zargon.
Zagor.
So, for example, with the old game, there used to be a thing where you press the buttons and you'd go, bam, boom, boom, bam, and then something would show up on the screen and it'd be like a dragon and you had to fight it and that kind of thing. And it would do all the calculations for you and that kind of thing. Hopefully they get that nostalgic, you know, note just right.
Do you want to run the video?
Go on,
do it, Justin. You can do it.
All right.
Run the TV commercial.
Just do it. Play the VT.
Video unavailable.
Huzzah.
Well done. Yeah.
There you go.
It was there when I put it in. Oh,
no. You'll have to update that one, sir.
Okay, to round out the show, we've got a Kickstarter to tell you about. Okay, there's 5 days left. It's by Anthony Bonnet Balanzat. I'll have another go at that. Anthony Bonnet Balanzat. What about that? Well done. Yeah. And awesome. It's called Sanctor VM.
Sanctorum, but they've carved it in stone.
Sanctorum. Yeah. Okay. Go for it, Ben.
Because that's cool, right?
Five days left on this one.
So this is another sort of like cooperative, dungeony, survivory sort of heroes versus the game style game. This one is a cooperative sci-fi survival horror game that they throw into the mix.
You'll like this, Justin.
Yeah.
It can be played in two different ways. So you can either play it in what's called adventure mode, where the players are going up against an overlord. So think of your typical sort of games of this ilk, where you're going dungeon diving and that kind of thing. And it has an RPG-style campaign that sort of runs in the background. Or you can play it in what's called mission mode, where everyone takes on the game itself, and it's sort of run by a little bit of an AI, and it has a cut-down sort of narrative mission structure to it rather than the full RPG experience from the sort of expanded adventure mode, as I was saying before. You'll take on the characters of the La Familia, who are a bunch of rather nice and alternative-looking heroes that look very badass, maybe not on the side of good in many ways. Ooh. And you'll be going through this game trying to survive, and you know, there's the typical sort of horror traits and that kind of thing. The really interesting thing that they've done for this is they've actually tried to look at sort of slightly more unsettling themes and terror and horror and body horror and that kind of thing. So I think Alien and that kind of stuff, Event Horizon, that kind of weird brutality and that kind of thing in the background. So they have said it's not for the faint of heart, so bear that in mind if you're checking things out for this. But they have also done some really cool stuff where they've collaborated with a whole bunch of different writers, artists, and musicians in order to create some really in-depth and interesting narrative for the game. Also the artwork that you see for it too, which has that kind of a little bit more of like a metal band aesthetic. And then there's also a bunch of musicians, as I was saying, so they've done a big soundtrack for the game too, which is something that Jerry pointed out when he showed me.
I'm seeing you can get an exclusive vinyl.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Happy.
Yes, it does.
Well, the way it's set up is it looks like it's like 90% RPG.
Yes.
Because the core book itself seems to be huge. They've got the background and the soundtrack that you can play when you're running that sort of side of it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a board game that's sort of connected to join them all together. But even things like when it says the villains there, that's actually the player characters. That's not who you're fighting against.
Yeah.
Because the idea is, I can't remember why, but Earth is going away. People have to get rid of themselves, you know, get out of there. Earth's going to go nuclear or whatever it happens to be. So they build these massive floating cities because they don't have FTL travel. Mm-hmm. And they just send these off as, you know, like legacy ships. So they are so huge that people can live out their life there, breed, reproduce, and eventually they'll arrive at a new planet. Sanctum or Sanctorum 5 or whatever this is called is one that got lost along the way.
Oh.
And you've got this whole generations of people have grown up there, lived there, died there. Factions have developed, people with weird predilections. You've got this whole sort of underclass that are just being used by the people on top. So the villains are actually just a group of desperate scumbags who have banded together to try and make their life less terrible when they're living in this floating hellhole. So it is very much like Event Horizon mixed with Necromunda, mixed with Call of Cthulhu, mixed with 40K. Put it in a pot, shake it, and go, that's your world, play there, kids.
I'm pretty sold on this one. I like the idea.
Love it. Right, that's your lot, otters. Ben, thank you very much. Also, a big thanks to Jerry and Justin and Lloyd for our guided tour through what's been happening in gaming this week. Come on over to ontabletop.com, and tomorrow we have the XLBS, where Justin...
We're going to talk some hobby. We're going to talk some community hobby. We're going to talk about some of the amazing hobby we've all been getting up to since we've had our break. And we're going to be having a little bit more of a look at... Ooh, was there something else?
I have some important historical research to share with you.
Awesome.
That was good.
Okay.
Awesome. You know I love a good history story.
Yeah, well, you're gonna love it, man, because tomorrow I'm going to give it to you. Okay, guys, fantastic. You have been watching The Weekender. Comment below.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.